So let's get started. Welcome, everyone, to the Conscious Business Telesummit. This is Adela Rubio, your host. And we're just going to start with a brief connection. So if you've been seated all day, just stand and place your feet hip-width. Soften your knees. Take a nice deep breath. And exhale, and just allow yourself with that exhale breath just to rest in the moment. And open to the adventure for the next hour in our cool conversation with Steve. And what's available for you here. And what's just for you. There's something that you'll get to hear that will touch you in a way that you'll get it and you'll take something away from the call. And the more that you can deeply listen and really just imagine that we're together, you know, like on some big sectional somewhere in someone's living room, just having this really cool conversation about stuff that is really meaningful and important and is going to make a difference in your world and the world of all of those whom you touch. And that those of us that are gathered at this telesummit are about bringing a different level of play to business, a little more awareness, a little more consciousness, a little bit more fun, a little more lightness, and a lot more dynamic being with what business is really all about, which is really about your service to the world and how the world honors you in its return for your abilities and your gifts and your work. Thank you, everyone, for being here, and thank you very much to Steve Swami, as he's most affectionately called. People email me, Steve, and they say, Swami sent me. And I love alliteration, so it makes me always smile. But Steve Behrman has been a comedian, performing comedy, and has been known as Swami Beyond Ananda. I heard about Swami years ago just by seeing his writing, and it was always so clever, always so smart, and always so spot on that it made me laugh, and it opened me up to a new way of thinking at the same time, which I think is what really this kind of comedy is all around. It's about really stepping in and tapping into those through lines that are really true for all of us. He's a co-author with Bruce Lipton of the recent Hay House release, Spontaneous Evolution, Our Positive Future, and A Way to Get There from Here. Steve does a lot of other things besides comedy. He's an author. He's a speaker. He travels a lot. He's on the road. He's being his work all the time, and it's always a pleasure to have you back here, Steve.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I appreciate the work that you do. And particularly, I appreciate the way that you've contextualized business and consciousness, because, once again, in these times, you know, we're living in times where I'm sure that you're finding, people on the call are finding, that every day you're being called on to be more true. And if there's something that you're doing that's not exactly aligned with your purpose, maybe you've noticed lately that those things are kind of falling away, and that they're being ripped from our fingers as we're trying to grasp them, but nonetheless, that seems to be what's going on. So I want to just very briefly review some of the things that Bruce Lipton and I came up with in our book called Spontaneous Evolution, Our Positive Future, and the Way to Get There from Here, and offer up a way that this applies to our situation right now. Bruce, for those you don't know, is a brilliant cellular biologist. He's the author of a best-selling book called The Biology of Belief. And the focus of Biology of Belief is really talking about how our invisible beliefs and perceptions determine our reality. And sometimes we mistake our beliefs for reality. And as we are now learning, about 95% of us is our subconscious mind. And, you know, that's a useful thing because you would hate to be, for those life coaches out there, to be saying, breathe, 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 heartbeat, 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 breathe, breathe, breathe. So it's good that certain things are going on subconsciously, that we don't have to control everything. But so often we read books and we go to seminars and we embrace affirmations and great lofty ideas and ideals, and we imagine that this is how we want to live our lives, and then we find that there are certain glitches that we have, perhaps past programming and limiting beliefs that we have and society has, that tend to that have sabotaged us and thwarted us. So it's very important, the first step, as Bruce and I talk about in Spontaneous Evolution, to begin to recognize that a lot of who we think we are is really based on programming and belief. And so the first very important step is to recognize that the people and things that we tend to blame in our lives are rather blameless, that we've all been subject to some of these same programming. So I'll give you an example. If I were to ask people on this phone call, how many of you believe in original sin? Very few would say, I believe in original sin. However, I would suggest that most of us subconsciously believe in some version of original sin, some version of the idea that there's something wrong with us, because we've been programmed to believe that. Everything in society has been telling us to believe that. So part of the great evolution that's happening right now is we are awakening to see our true human potential and recognize that what we've been taught has been limiting. There's so much stress and strain and struggle going on these days that people are having these apocalyptic visions, whether it's the evangelical Christians imagining that the rapture is just a few years away, or the scientists talking about the sixth great extinction that's going on, or those people who are talking about 2012, something is going to happen in 2012. As a matter of fact, Swami Beyondananda, my cohort, is actually writing a book called 2012, The Secrets Revealed. And, of course, the book will be out in 2013.
Of course.
Yeah. So anyway, there's a sense, this is apocalyptic sense. Well, you know, when you go to find the original meaning of the word apocalypse, it means the lifting of the veils. And so we are experiencing that right now. The veils are being lifted on some of the hidden stories of humankind, both positive and negative. And, you know, those of us who are spiritual seekers recognize that over the past 25 years or so, many of these secret teachings that have been held in protective custody by various spiritual organizations are now being liberated, and they're being released so that every human being has access to spiritual wisdom that has been hidden. At the same time, we're also experiencing that many of the lies that our government has told us and many of these political toxins are also being released into the body politic and mainstream. And so it's very important that we have the right amount of love and the right amount of understanding to metabolize these toxins. So in these evolutionary times, it's important to recognize that as things are falling apart, they are also falling together. And in our book, Bruce and I talk about the next phase of human evolution as the recognition that we're all cells in a new superorganism called humanity. And we are here to achieve what the Swami would call humanifest destiny, manifesting our destiny individually and collectively. And what that really means, and I think that this is really resonant with ancient spiritual wisdom now being proved by modern science, what this really means is we are each here to let our light fully shine. And of course, the Swami calls this fulfillment. So the roundabout way of saying this is I want to acknowledge Adela, I want to acknowledge everybody on this call for holding that understanding that this conversation is bigger than who we each are individually in business, but rather it relates to how we relate our new business or our old business in a new way to create this new world that we know is possible. I want to offer one more analogy, and then I'll see if Adela has something she wants to ask. one of the powerful biological metaphors that we refer to in the book is the caterpillar to butterfly metaphor. Now, the caterpillar is a very successful organism. It crawls along the ground, it eats incessantly, it builds up a lot of internal structure, but at some point, the caterpillar mechanism and organism begins to fall apart. And when the caterpillar begins to transform into the butterfly, there's what one would term chaos, because all of these cells are melting and deconstructing. And these new cells begin to appear, called imaginal cells. They're really called imaginal cells, as in imagination. And initially, these cells are isolated, and the caterpillar does not recognize it as part of itself. But at some point, these imaginal cells begin to communicate with one another. They begin to connect. And at some point, they form a powerful enough field to become the butterfly. Now, what's very interesting is that the caterpillar and the butterfly have the exact same DNA. What's different is the signal they are tuning into and receiving. So let's for a minute look at our human society. The British historian Arnold Toynbee, in writing about the rise and fall of civilizations, said that as a civilization is in decline, these forward-looking individuals, he called them creative minority, begin to look forward and begin to embrace whatever the next phase is, and they begin to design their lives and hopefully design the new culture to live into that. I don't know how many of you have read or seen the book by Paul Ray and Sherry Anderson on the cultural creatives. Paul Ray, who is a sociologist and a market researcher, identified a group of people, a very strong mindset and heart set, called the cultural creatives. In 1999, when he wrote the book, he identified these people as being about 25% of the adult population of America. And here, these are the people who are essentially receiving the new signal from the not yet in existence organism called humanity. And these are the people who recognize in some form that we're all in this together, that we all are part of this greater whole, and through cooperation as opposed to cutthroat competition, we are able to achieve our individual goals and contribute to the whole of humanity. Now, when Paul Ray wrote the book in 1999, he identified this as being about 25% of adult Americans. 10 years later, when I talked with him last year, it had now grown to almost one-third of all adult Americans. So those people who recognize that we are all part of one thing, that their interest, they recognize that the what's healthy for the cell, for the individual, for the community, for humanity, and for the planet is really one thing. We are now about one-third of the adult population in this country. So, and I would imagine that in being in a seminar on business and consciousness, you are involved in some way, shape, or form with building this new butterfly organism. So I just want to tune back into Adela to
Yeah, you know, being with you is like, you know, a trip in the life. Fantastic, Steve. I could just go with you. but I love what you're pointing out, that this whole thing about cells and organized intelligence and the power of coming together in a collective to create, you know, and actually take that leap to what isn't yet showing up fully in the physical world, and yet those of us that can sense it and feel it and are experiencing it in some levels and being drawn to implement it and try these new ways of being in our business are starting to see that. Because I speak to a lot of people, and I've got lots of folks on these calls, and a lot of us are saying a lot of the same things. There are through lines through all of these calls. So I wondered if you could speak some to what you've noticed, because I know that you do a lot of speaking and I know you run into a lot of communities. What is it that you're noticing that communities are tapping into in terms of this new way of being individual and also collectively expressed?
Yeah, I just want to say that's a really, really good point. So I want to go backward a little bit and address the exact thing that you just asked. What people are beginning to recognize is that what we call freedom, that actually the paradox is that the more connected we are with one another, the more free we can become. Because the less resource we waste fighting one another, the more resource can be spent expanding our own pursuit of happiness and expanding the things that we can positively do together. What you may be noticing, and this is something that I'm finding in community, is that people are becoming impatient with their own impatience, actually. they're becoming impatient with you know, somehow railing against what isn't working and are now beginning to turn their attention toward what is. And as I think Van Jones said a while back, Martin Luther King in his great speech didn't say, "I have a complaint." You know, it's really about the dream that we're building forward. So I think that one of the very positive things is that people are recognizing that the caterpillar structures around us are falling apart and that they can't really be put back together. And so the next question is, what can we put together and what is the new piece that is growing? And to answer that question, I want to delve a little bit deeper into what Bruce Lipton and I found out about the economy of the cells, the internal workings of the cells. In the cells, energy, and really, if you think about it, the economy is nothing but moving energy. That's what really money represents. Money represents the ability to make things happen in the world. And so that's really all that economy is moving of energy. In the body, energy is moved through ATP, adenosine triphosphate, which is a phosphorus molecule that is used to store, transmit, and spend energy. Now, every cell gets what they need. You know, we have a phenomenal system underneath our skins, 50 trillion cells cooperating. We have full employment, universal health care, and no cell left behind. And the organs actually cooperate with one another. You never read about the liver invading the pancreas, demanding the islets of Langerhans. So what we have underneath our skins, what nature in its wisdom has provided, is a system where every cell can thrive and every cell makes a contribution. At the same time, those cells and systems that do the most important part for the survival and thrival of the body, those cells get the most energy. So in a certain sense, heart cells get paid more than skin cells. Now, skin cells get what they need, but heart cells, because of what they do, get more energy. Furthermore, they may even have other cells working for them. They may have other cells doing things to enhance their job. Now, in the economy of the body, there's no credit. In other words, you can't put something on your ascended MasterCard and pay for it next lifetime. You only have the energy available to you now. And energy is stored in fat, for example. Now, when energy is liberated from these bank accounts in the body, it's liberated not on the basis of individual cells thriving at the expense of other cells. That would be called cancer. The way money, the way energy is spent in the body is based on what is best for the whole system, because in creating a healthy system, every cell gets to thrive. So let's bring it back to the domain of human economics right now. What we've seen over the past year and a half to two years is essentially the crumbling of the House of Credit Cards economy. We've seen this insanity where I think it was Lehman Brothers, they were leveraged by a factor of 35. That is, they were able to loan out 35 times the amount of money that they had. And so when all of this collapsed and when Bernie Madoff, what a great name, huh? Madoff with billions. And, of course, it makes you wonder who writes God's material. But anyway, when you've had these kind of situations where we call them sociopathogens in the body politic, have made off with a lot of our wealth, what are we left with? And the answer is we're left with the real economy. That is, what is truly valuable? So what is truly valuable? And I've narrowed it down to five things. Number one, what's truly valuable is energy. The energy, essentially the energy we get from the sun. That on this planet, every form of energy is derivative from the energy of the sun. And so all we need to do is to figure out how to magnify and magnetize that energy, which is for all intents and purposes infinite for our purposes. So the first area of economics is energy, channeling energy, manufacturing energy, using energy. The second is the food that comes up out of the ground. Now, if you think about it, this is the recurring wealth. Every year, food pops up. And even if you're a lousy farmer, you can't prevent food from coming up. So the earth yields this bountiful abundance every year. And in fact, there have been some economic systems based chiefly on food. And so the farmers are well paid at the bottom, and then all of the wealth bubbles up to the top as opposed to thinking it's going to trickle down from the bottom, and you know, from the top to the bottom. And of course the Swami says, well, that's the trickle down theory, and that's why the people at the bottom are called peons. I think something's trickling down. I wonder what that is. So anyway, but the point is this, that in real economy, the real things that matter is energy, food. And I'm going to add three more human elements: love, imagination, and community. Love because, as we are finding, love is more than just a mushy, gushy sentiment. It is the universal harmonic that holds things together. And we resonate with that which is love. Love, health, sanity, these are all the same vibrations. And so one of the underused tools in the human toolkit is love. And when love is applied, everything else becomes easier and operates more efficiently. The next is imagination. And you can see how technology allows you to magnify the resources of the world by using our know-how and our wisdom and our information to have things operate more efficiently. And we are great at inventing. We humans are great at that. However, we need to counterbalance our inventiveness with love and with community, because that is what allows us to operate more efficiently. So what I'm seeing in communities, what I'm seeing in the people that I'm speaking with, the people who write to me and the people that I visit, is that everybody is looking for ways to move evolution forward by becoming more aware and connecting more in community. And they're looking for ways that their product or service can provide more genuine value, to add to the production of food or energy, to add to the production of beauty, to enhance love, imagination, and community in the world. And I suspect that everyone on this call has a business that's doing one of those things.
Yeah, absolutely. I love those five elements of the real economy. Really pretty basic and pretty simple, Steve.
Yes, and by the way, I just want to say this. I have an article called On the Real Economy,
mm-hmm.
The Natural Economy, and if you write to me at info@wakeuplaughing.com, I'm happy to send that article to you.
Can you repeat that email again?
Info, at wakeuplaughing.com.
Okay, great.
And I'll send you the article free.
Wonderful. So what are some of the other things that you've noticed in terms of the technologies and the ways of communication that are really widespread now? What are these things pointing to, Steve?
Well, you know, they're pointing to, as I said, or maybe I didn't say, that what Bruce and I discovered in our book is that every level of evolution, from our becoming single-cell organisms to becoming multi-cell organisms to becoming the very complex 50-trillion-cell organism that we are today, and to recognizing that the next phase of human evolution is seeing that we're all cells in the same body. Every phase of evolution involves expanding two things, awareness and community. So if we're looking at the technology tools that we have with us, whether it's the internet and websites, which are in a way becoming an old-fashioned technology, whether it's the social media sites, Twitter, the use of Facebook, LinkedIn, et cetera, what all of these are doing is they are very rapidly enhancing our ability to communicate, our ability to gather knowledge, to aggregate ideas, and to build community. So I'll give you an example. When Bruce and I were finishing up our book, the last piece that we had to do was to footnote all of our sources. And I read 40 books to do my part of this. And so here we are. We're looking at our notes. You can only imagine the chaos. He had, at the time, was in New Zealand, and I'm here in California, looking at our notes and wanting to get the exact page citations for all of the information that we put in the book. Well, what I discovered is that through Amazon and through Google, you can type in the name of a book, and you can type in a phrase, and it automatically brings up the page where that phrase appears. So you can imagine how much more efficient the process was for me to cite all of these citations. My point is this, that we now have access to a worldwide, growing, deepening encyclopedia of information. And, you know, it's been interesting to watch over the past 15 or so years as the World Wide Web has expanded, how people have looked at how do I monetize this? Because, again, we are living in a society where we have to figure out if we're in business, we have to figure out, well, where's the income? How do I monetize this tremendous resource? And what we're seeing is two things. Number one, that the old idea of advertising is going out the window, that we're so tired of advertising, we are so completely tired of advertising, that if there is a way for us to tune it out, we will.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's putting our TV shows on TiVo and muting the commercials, or whether it's simply ignoring all the Google ads on the websites that we go to. But something that is happening that's very, very important is a new kind of network marketing that has no uplines and downlines. The new kind of network marketing is basically affiliative, and it either gets monetized through actual affiliations, where if by using my network I send people to your website and they buy something, I get paid.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one way. But there's other kinds of affiliative marketing where simply by people who you trust saying, this is a product that I stand behind, that I've used this and I value it, or even companies becoming associated with, let's say, meeting various green standards or the three bottom lines or whatever, that the aware consumer, and I'm saying that's 33% of us right now, the aware consumer is going to be interested in the holistic aspect of whatever business they're doing business with. They want to make sure that that business is really supporting this new paradigm, and they're much more likely to respond to an affiliate notice than they are to an advertisement that's trying to push something on them.
Yeah,
thing. So when we have people on Facebook putting things on their page and recommending things, particularly when they're not getting anything from it, they're excited about it, then those become ways that the marketplace learns about new products without feeling manipulated. Is that making sense?
Yes, because it's a personal endorsement of something that you're so excited about that you become a raving fan and you can't wait to share it with everyone. And that's what each person that's got a business on here, that's what you want to become.
And, you know, I want to say something about marketing because, again, marketing's, if we think about how this has worked in the past, and everything's changing now. We're in a caterpillar butterfly situation where things are falling apart and things are falling together. So part of what's falling apart is this whole notion of pushing something into the marketplace. And people don't like being pushed, and we've had enough of that. We've had enough of that manipulation. However, when you have loyal fans out there who love what you do, who appreciate your product, who have benefited from it, those people can create the pull marketing that really, really grows things organically. And that's really the only way it's going to work right now, because having lost this phony economy based on speculation, it's gone. It's never coming back. We're left with the true economy. That is what is truly valuable. So if in looking at our businesses, we can ask two questions. Number one, what's truly valuable to me? And then number two, what is truly valuable to my potential client or customer? And what is it that I do that provides that true value? How do I enhance their well-being? What do I do that brings more love, beauty, functionality, and genuinely useful product into the world? And then, if I can imagine, I mean, there is a certain amount of metaphysics. It's very important right now that we imagine whatever we do going out into the world and abundantly benefiting everyone it comes in contact with. And if we did nothing but spend 5 minutes every morning just imagining our service, our product, whatever it is that we're doing, rippling out into the world and leaving people smiling and leaving happiness, functionality, health, well-being, and so on. And we imagine that. And we recognize, truly appreciate what it is that we do. If we appreciate what it is that we do, we don't have to tell anybody. We simply appreciate it in ourselves, and then we begin to notice that these waves begin to come back to us. We begin to get phone calls and letters from people who've benefited from our work. Now, does it make sense to capture these? Absolutely, because it's so much easier to have somebody else speak about your work and your value than having you do it yourself. Unless you're like the Swami, who likes to speak of himself in the third person. That's different. But essentially, what you want is to be on the lips of other people telling you what you already know about what you do, but telling it in their words, because their words are going to spark other people. And if somebody, and you know it yourself, it's so much easier for you to call a friend and go, wow, I just discovered an amazing book or an amazing product, And I'm telling you about this because I'm excited, as opposed to, well, I just got hired to promote this, and so I'm calling you to tell you about it. It's totally different. And I think that this authenticity is so much a part of this new marketplace that we're just feeling our way into.
Yeah, and that's why we're hungry for authenticity, especially after all of the decomposition of our world as it crumbles. We're really hungry for it. And I think that that's also one of the reasons, Steve, that being authentically, uniquely you is actually, instead of, you know, trying to fit in, you need to stand out and boldly be you.
You know, there's a famous quote from Oscar Wilde, be yourself, everybody else is taken.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the Swami says each of us is totally unique, just like everybody else. And I think that the world is in its right place when we are doing more and more and more of that, what we are specifically here to do. Now, the tendency, when we're, you know, I could speak for myself. I've been, let's see, the last job I had, I think, was 1978. So I've been self-employed for a long time. And from time to time, self-unemployed. And so when you tend to be a single owner of your business, there's a tendency to want to do everything yourself. And I think about a few months ago, I took a business personality profile test called DISC, D-I-S-C.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very enlightening because it looks at four different qualities that we may have or not have. And the D quality it stands for dominance, but what it really means is proactivity. So people who are CEOs and who are real, you know, leaders and so on have very high D. The I has to do with interactivity. So I'm very high in I. That's, you know, the people who are communicators, who are persuaders, entertainers, et cetera, networkers. So I'm high in that. The S quality is the quality of support, and everybody needs support in their business. And some people are phenomenal supporters of other people. They go, show me something really good that I can get behind, and I will do everything I can to help support that venture. And then the C has to do with competency and handling details. So if you have a business, you need to have somebody who is going to actually handle the details of getting things done. So when we are a single individual proprietor, the natural tendency is to try to do everything ourselves. So if we look at the parts of our business that aren't working as well, we probably will recognize that we're trying to do things that we're not good at, that we're not naturally gifted at. And what that does, not only are we not good at that and end up not doing it well, but it takes our valuable time from what it is that we are really here to do that is our specific, unique gift. So one of my suggestions is that you go Google the DISC profile. I think it's like $30 to take it. Take the profile. And you may not learn anything that you don't already know, but it will confirm the areas that you're very strong in and those that you're not so strong in. And what that means is that you need to augment those other parts of your business by taking on associates. You know, whether if you're not good at handling details, then hire an office manager who's going to handle those for you on a part-time basis. If you're not good at supporting yourself, then hire somebody who is going to speak you into the marketplace and speak for you. And I think that what happens is that we have a lot of people who are freelancing, working for a number of different people, doing the things that they do best so that those individuals are liberated to do what they do best.
Yeah, and it actually frees them up to actually focus their brilliance on what it is that they're fantastically well at.
And this is really, and I think that one of the great things about the new media and so on, and people hooking up, and again, we're really just at the beginning of this, so these things aren't really fully formed. One of the great things about it is that we now have the opportunity through the computer to very easily have multiple income streams and be doing the same thing for a number of different people and have it all add up to being paid. So as we begin to identify our skills more closely and more carefully, we see how we can augment other people in their businesses and have them augment our business so that more of our time is spent doing what we're here to do.
Yeah, and even in that, even in seeing your skills and abilities, sometimes it's a lot easier to have your skills and abilities reflected to you. And so that's where community and partnering up with other people, which is really, I'm seeing that a lot, Steve, people collaborating. And even if they're not doing it yet, they're wanting to, and they're wanting to do it in a different way than what they've seen before. And I was wondering if you could... because this whole social media and interconnection and online community has been around for a number of years. I know I have been a member of online communities for over probably 8 years now. I was wondering, how have you seen that this global connection and community has impacted local communities?
Well, one of the great ways it's impacted local communities is that you can take things that work somewhere else and immediately adapt it to your community and begin to use it and modify it and then feed it back into the system. And we're just beginning to see these kinds of wiki-like systems. In fact, in the next half a year, I will be creating something very similar, heartland community where spontaneous evolution goes to evolve. And this will be a living, learning, laughing, and loving community, as a friend of mine says, where people will be able to take ideas that are working somewhere and begin to apply them in their own local community. Again, we have this amazing forms of communication that are instantaneous. So what you're seeing, if you look at the blog phenomenon, what that is that information is traveling, it's catching on. There are things that are surprising that all of a sudden so many people, you'll get something forwarded to you. You'll get a little piece on YouTube, and all of a sudden, something that was produced for very little money in somebody's little studio, because the message is one that has to be heard right now, the marketplace seizes on this message and proliferates it widely. So part of the focus of the blogs is to begin to recognize what the trends are and where they're going so that we can better able to anticipate these trends. The important thing in looking to anticipate trends and using social media and using the internet to do that is to make sure that we keep our prime authenticity in place so that we're not just torn from pillar to post as we try to follow this trend or that trend, but we begin to recognize how those trends relate to our most powerful abilities and missions.
Yeah, and there are also signposts letting you know that you're on a track that's really being traveled by lots of folks, that you're part of a collective movement. You know, the more of these conversations that I have, the more that I connect with folks in my community, I come to know that I'm not the only one experiencing these urgings for a new way of being in business, this longing for transparency and interconnectedness in everything in my life, where there's no separation between my business and the rest of my day or whatever it is that I do, that, you know, it's that wherever you go, there you are kind of feel. any parting, you know, tips or thoughts for folks? I know that you mentioned love and laughter as evolutionary tools, but, well, first, can you speak a little bit about that before we go into the parting tips that I wanted to...
Okay, yeah, before, yeah. I want to say something about authenticity, first of all. It's like that old George Burns quote, honesty and sincerity, if you can fake those, you have it made. But the authenticity thing is, the more transparent, truthful, and authentic you are, the less work you have to do, the less energy you have to spend trying to either be defensive or to keep up a front. So right now, we all know that this is a time of great learning. And, you know, when somebody, comes back after, let's say, doing a project or, you know, trying to do something, and they say, it was a learning experience, I go, oh, I'm sorry to hear that. How much was your tuition? Because so much of what we're in a very rapid learning curve, and sometimes we feel like we've failed, but really what we've done is we've learned. There's a famous story, John Holt, in his book, Why Children Fail. He was teaching a math class to sixth graders, and he was playing a numbers game. He said, okay, I'm thinking of a number between 1 and 100. And so one of the kids, who's playing 20 questions, asked, is the number between 1 and 50? And John Holt said, no. And all the other kids went, oh, like it was the wrong answer. So John Holt pointed out that in getting that no answer, it was the same as getting a yes answer. Because if no, it's not between 1 and 50. Yes, it's between 51 and 100.
Mm-hmm.
But even though a no answer may give you the exact same information as a yes answer would have, we're trained that success means only yes. So as we look at our first thing, before I get into love and laughter, as we look at our experiences over the last 2 years in particular, and we see things that we go, oh, I messed that up or I failed at that, if there is something learned, it's a success, because it moves you towards something that's going to be, it's going to work better. In the domain of how do we do our daily lives? We have been given some phenomenal tools as human beings, and included in those tools are love and laughter. Now, by love, what I mean is understanding. This is a fundamental spiritual understanding that everything is love and everything else is derivative. So when we look at something that is a disappointment to us, if we truly embrace that and love it, We can essentially love the hell out of it, and we can recognize the hidden gifts in that picture, and then we stop pushing against it, and we're no longer using our energy to resist. Laughter, of course, gives us perspective. I have an ebook. If you're interested, it's on sale right now, and I'll tell you more about it. It's called Wake Up Laughing, An Insider's Guide to the Cosmic Comedy. And that's really a way, a deep course in laughter to help you use laughter to get perspective on your situations. And the power of laughter is that when we voluntarily choose to laugh at our situation, it releases the resistance, and new solutions come in. I'm going to give you an extreme example. In his book, Man's Search for Meaning, Viktor Frankl talks about being in a Nazi death camp during World War II, and he and a fellow inmate made a pact that whatever was happening every day, they would find something to laugh about, because if they were able to keep that perspective, there was a part of them that could not be put in prison. And to give you an idea of the leverage that humor provided, one of the jokes that actually circulated among the inmates in these camps involve these two Jewish guys who decide that they are going to assassinate Hitler. And they know Hitler's motorcade passes this one intersection every day at 11 in the morning, and they're waiting for him. Well, they arrive, and Hitler doesn't show up. 11:15, 11:30, when he's not there by 11:45, one of the assassins says to the other, gee, I hope nothing's happened to him. So that's the kind of leverage that humor gives us to give us a God's eye view, to really bump us up to the bigger, bigger, bigger picture on our situation. And the release of laughter often, my website's called Wake Up Laughing, because often there is an aha in the wake of the ha-ha, that you get an insight. The laughter shakes apart these rigid beliefs that we have, and it disrupts our ordinary reality. And in that disruption, we are able to see new patterns, and learning is, after all, seeing patterns. Plus, laughing is fun.
Yeah, but it's definitely a perspective shifter.
Yeah.
And it also releases your energy, as you mentioned. It just really opens you up.
Yes,
yeah.
It does. And laughter, if you think about it, there's a lot of emotional release that comes with laughter. And you know, there are these laughter yoga, laughter clubs, and so on. And just the physical act of laughter changes the body's physiology, even if you're not laughing at anything.
Yeah, yeah. That's really interesting, because I remember I read a book, and now I'm not remembering who the book was written by, and it was all about laughing. And I remember they came to a school that I was attending in New York City, the Institute of Integrative Nutrition. And, you know, at first it feels a little phony. You know, it's almost like, you know, I'm making myself laugh. And then you just start laughing, like naturally.
Well, it's kind of like getting a car started, you know. And off you're going. And it really is true.
Yeah.
And there have been studies that show that when we smile, when you just, we call it the levitational pull that pulls the corners of the mouth up in a smile. When you smile, it changes the physiology so that the blood chemistry and hormones that your body secretes actually enhance your health and make you feel better. So if you're not feeling happy, smile.
Yeah, quick little things like that. That's a great tip. How you can paradoxically just shift your energy and your orientation by doing something physically, like either laughing or smiling. A lot of times we think that we've got to shift the inside. And sometimes just an external shift will create an internal shift, like you're mentioning.
That's right. And I think part of the cosmic joke is that things are actually easier than we have imagined. That's part of the cosmic joke. We take on this badge of suffering and struggle and so on because so much of our human stories that we cherish are about that. But I think that the exciting thing, that this is my interpretation of 2012, is that it's going to be a time where we actually give up the old story and begin to write a new one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's what we're all doing here. I think we're creating a new story around business. I know that you've been going around creating a new story about how we relate to ourselves and how we see the world, you know, using comedy. And, you know, that we are creating a new story.
It's all the same story.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all the same new story because there's what we're finding is that everything is related. So you can't separate economics from spirituality, from the environment, from self-worth and personal growth. It's really the same conversation. And so as we begin to look at the whole picture and see how the specific business that we're in fits this whole picture, first of all, we'll see the areas where we can very quickly weave our gift with the world that wants to emerge. It's a sense of relief. And then I think we need to be compassionate with ourselves, and this is, again, where love and laughter really serve us, in recognizing that we are on the leading edge, and sometimes the leading edge is the bleeding edge, that you know, you're right up front. You know, you, earlier, Adela, you said you're an early adapter and that you've been involved in social media for 8 years. That's a long time.
Yeah.
You know, that's like the beginning of LinkedIn, perhaps.
Yeah. Well, I like playing with the new. To me, it's fun. It's fun to try things. It's fun to fall flat on my face. And
well, that's why God gave us a nose.
Oh, absolutely. How else are we going to cushion the fall? I think a lot of what I get from your work is this whole lightening up of all this, you know, seriousness and significance, and that, you know, this adventure of our lives and our contribution and our work is just so much more fun than we may have even imagined.
Yeah, again, and it kind of reminds me of that old Far Side cartoon. It's a hell scene with various devils and all that, and, you know, it's fire and brimstone. And there's a guy with a wheelbarrow full of ashes, and he's obviously whistling a happy tune. Mm. And one of the devils is saying to another, you know, I don't think we're getting through to this guy. So fortunately, I think that we're breaking through this this societal belief in seriousness, and we're beginning to recognize that foundationally, life is meant to be a joyful experience. And, you know, it's not to try to prematurely transcend suffering, but there is a point where suffering no longer serves a useful purpose. And at that point, it's so much of a blessed relief to let it go and realize that so much of our pain is self-inflicted because of resistance.
Yeah. Yeah, Steve, can you share any last tip? You're someone, you mentioned you've been doing this since the 70s, you've been self-employed, you've been doing your own kind of work and evolving with it. Any tips for those that are starting on the adventure, getting frustrated with the adventure?
Well, first of all, I think it's very important to identify what it is that you get up for in the morning. What gets you up in the morning? What is it? Now, even if it's not a business yet, even if it's something that's just something that you've imagined and you don't even know what it is. Now, I will tell you a story. I used to live in Texas, we used to go to the annual Christmas fair, and there were all these wonderful products there. And I saw this product that absolutely made me fall down and laugh. And it all started when this guy who was a painter was using these latex paints, and he accidentally spilled some paint on his studio floor. And the next morning he got there and it dried, and it was like this thick rubber paint, and it looked like a tie. He got the idea of making beautifully colored rubber ties, and that had all kinds of designs on them. He made one for an internist that had the intestinal tract, you know. And when I bought a few of these, and here is a product, totally whimsical product, totally out of imagination. He could not keep these. He could not keep up with the demand. And he finally ended up selling his business to his employees when he got tired of making these ties. So something that's just a whimsical idea can catch on and become a business that catches fire. So pay attention to what it is that you love. Pay attention to the sparks of imagination. Years ago, I made a declaration that I was going to perform comedy. I knew that I was good at it. I'd been putting it off for years. And a friend suggested that I perform comedy as the Swami character, who the name flew to me in the head, and flew into my head one day. And I started doing this, and it completely took off on its own. It captured people's imagination. So begin to notice what it is that you do that people talk about, that people tell you, nobody else does this. This is totally unique. I love this. Where did you learn to do that? that's the kinds of, those are the kinds of chunks of feedback that you get from friends, family, and strangers that are your guideposts for where you are to grow your business. And then marketing takes care of itself.
Yeah, especially if you're being your work all the time. It's something that people just get from you. And it's this pull kind of magnetic experience, which is so delightful in and of itself. So.
Well, I appreciate that. And, you know, I do it to amuse myself. When I come up with something funny, I know it's going to be funny three times. It's funny when I come up with it and I amuse myself. Then it's funny when I tell my wife, Trudy. And then it's funny when I share it with an audience. And it's a blessing to be able to do that. But everybody has a gift of some sort that has that vibration around it, that makes other people happy, that relieves them of a burden, that does something that they don't have to do, that makes their life better, that brings beauty, that brings laughter, that brings enlightened wisdom and perspective. Everybody who is on this call is doing something like that. And begin to appreciate yourself, because the more you appreciate yourself, the more yourself will appreciate.
An increase.
That's right. That's the only kind of crease we want.
That's right. Steve, where can people go and find out more about you? Do you have? I know that you've got some live performances coming up. Tell us a little bit more about, you know, what's up next for you. So
okay, well,
we
first of
them.
All, my website's wakeuplaughing.com. That's Wake Up Laughing, and you may even have a link to it on your site, Adela.
Yeah.
And what's happening is this coming week, Friday and Saturday, I'm going to be in Port Townsend and then Seattle. So if you have friends up in the Midwest and these people, you know, there's two kinds of people in the world, the kind of people who love to laugh and the kind of people who need to laugh. So if your friends fall into those categories, go to my website and you'll find the information. Then next Wednesday, a week from tomorrow, we'll be in Portland, Oregon. And then on the following Saturday, on the 15th and 16th, Saturday and Sunday, we'll be in Ashland, Oregon. Two things I want to tell you about. I want to remind you that if you request the article that I've written on the new economics, I'll send that to you for free. You can buy a copy of Spontaneous Evolution and have it autographed on my site. You can also get a copy of the Wake Up Laughing ebook. It's only $10 right now, so it's very inexpensive. And also, we have a number of specials where you can buy all of Swami's products for ridiculously small amount of money so that you can share them with your friends.
Well, wonderful. I will make sure that we get the link to your site out with all those wonderful offers to our community and conscious business folks.
Yes.
It's been wonderful having you, Steve, at the Conscious Business Telesummit, as always, and we look forward to having you come back soon.
Well, thanks, Adela. I really appreciate your questions. I hope it was of value to your folks out there, and I'm certainly happy to receive any feedback.
Okay, absolutely.
Okay.
So, folks, we will see you later. Thank you, everyone, for